everybody.
This is the
Sananada
show.
Show.
Welcome
to
Create Don't Hate.
Create Don't Hate
podcast. Okay. Welcome to the Create Don't Hate podcast. It's our first episode of 2022, and we are kicking things off with a bang. And I have with me here Miss Yip Pin Siew. I don't need to introduce her too much. I'll let her say a bit about herself. If you don't know already who she is, you should know now. Pin Siew, please.
Thank you so much, Sydney. It's really my pleasure to be here today to be sharing my stories with all of you. Just a really short introduction about myself. So I started swimming competitively when I was 12 years old, actually. Mm. And my career has spent so far till date 18 years. And I was just telling a friend recently that if I had put this much effort into a kid as much as I put into swimming, my kid would be in A-levels right now. So that's a really long time.
Yeah, 18 years is a long time.
Yes. And I'm not looking to be stopping anytime soon. I want to go to Paris 2024.
Nice.
And then after that, I might consider. Yeah.
Nice. 18 years. Wow. You are 30 this year.
I'm 30 this year.
Still young. Don't worry.
That's what everyone tells me.
Yeah. Actually, one of the things that came out with all these conversations with other athletes is, I think in some other countries where support systems are stronger, where there's professional support and all that, I think athletes can actually go on a bit longer. Whereas in Singapore, I think we are a bit constrained by certain things, whether it's resources or whether it's the need to go out into the working world and so on and so forth. But yeah. I think Paris is 2024, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's,
yeah,
and
I do agree with you when you say that there are certain constraints in Singapore. Mm-hmm. I think that this taking sports as a professional career is not that recognized in Singapore yet. Yeah, and I'm hoping that it changes in the next few years with more and more Singaporeans performing well internationally. So it has to seem like a viable option before more people are willing to take it on, and it will then strengthen our sporting career eventually.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've gone a long way. You look at the structures we have now, you have Sport SG, Coach SG, and all the different pathways. We've really grown a lot. Back then, I mean, like, what I am personally, I am 36 this year. I became a PE teacher and did a bit of coaching because I wanted to get involved with sport, right? And also, like you said, a viable career. I also want to have my own family. I also want to be able to, move on with life and things like that. So that are certain considerations. Yeah, so, okay, Pinchu, back to you. Like you said, you started swimming competitively at 12.
Yes.
How did you get into swimming? What was it like? Or were other sports in consideration as well when you started to take a more competitive approach?
Okay. So I started swimming more as like a family activity. Mm. I think when I was around 5, I have 2 elder brothers. So my elder brothers would learn how to swim, whereas I would play in the baby pool alone.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, I got really bored. And then I asked my mom if I could join them as well.
Mm.
She asked the coach at that point in time, and the coach was pretty keen about it. So that was how I first started. I remember my very first lesson in the deep pool was really just walking like a crab sideways, hopping around like a bunny, just really getting comfortable with the water. Yeah, and I have really loved the water ever since, because I have a disability, and in the water, it feels like I can do anything that anyone else can do. So it really took away the this feeling of being different. And especially when I was younger, there wasn't a lot of representation for people with disabilities. So I did feel very alone. So all I wanted to do was to feel like everyone else. So that was how my passion for swimming started.
It's the water seems like a leveler, right?
Yeah, yes,
I think I was when I was talking to your good friend, I think sometime last year or sometime before, Teresa, and I think she also shared the same sentiments about how being in the water gives you that freedom, right? To be able to control your own movements, to level up, and that kind of feeling you can't really describe. So I get that. When you started swimming, when you went into the pool, when you fell in love with swimming, did you ever see yourself going like, oh, in 10 years time, in 20 years time, I'll be going to the Olympics, I'll be doing this, I'll be doing that. Did it ever cross your mind?
Not at that point in time. So my journey was really like a step-by-step thing. Yeah. I did it because I enjoyed it. I did it because my coach was there waiting for me. I did it because training was fun. And then eventually I did it because I wanted to do better. I did it because I wanted my times to be better than what it was. So it really started from extrinsic motivation all the way to intrinsic motivation. Until today, I'm still doing it because I really do want to give everything I have, leave it behind at the pool, and then just really see how my timings can improve and things like that. And at this point in time, it's not just about training, it's really the entire sports science coming together to help take this like milliseconds off.
I think at the level that you're at, like you said, like, it's really about the minor tweaks that can really make a big difference onto your times at the pool. It's interesting that you mentioned the motivation part, right? Like, I think growing up, when we fall in love with sport, there's that initial falling in love with for whatever reason. And then that first phase is always, you know, extrinsic motivation, like you said. Like, maybe it's with friends, maybe I enjoy for whatever reason. And then after that, that continuous pursuit really shifts to an intrinsic motivation kind of thing. Like you said, I think nobody forces you to go to Paris. Nobody wants you to. Nobody is pushing you to do this, but ultimately yourself, right? I think that's an interesting, and that's something that I always admire in like athletes from the individual sports. So when I speak to like the sprinters or the swimmers and those kind of things, they are really intrinsically motivated because it's pursuit about it's that chase from you chasing the better version of yourself, better time, better.
Which is why I don't understand team sports. So I always have this, not argument, but I always have this conversation with a friend who is from team sports. And then we like to like say that individual sports or team sports is better. But like, I cannot understand team sports because, you know, for individual sports, you really, really do your 100%. You are in control of your performance. But for team sports, it's so difficult because you are one person, but maybe 10 other people are in control of your performance. So, like, I cannot fathom.
It's true, it's true, it's true. And for individual sport, an off day means you're off. Like, your results will be off, your performance will be off, that's it. But for team sport, you know, if you're off, somebody else may be able to carry you.
That's true, that's
somebody
true.
Somebody else may be able to take on the responsibility. And in that sense, actually, on this topic, I was just thinking like a few days back about how much of as a person I really lack discipline. So I tried for many years in a team sport environment because collectively we own the sport, we own the responsibility. I don't think I would have lasted so long in an individual sport, like you said. So it's a really different setup, and I really admire the guys from the individual sport like yourself. So in all those years that you've done competitive swimming, from you started at I assume from your time in school, right? Then how was it like? Like what was the transition like? Like you swam in school and then after that, you know, I'm assuming that you did it at a club level and things like that. What was the transition like?
It was pretty tough initially, especially when I was in school. It was tough at that point in time, but now looking back on hindsight, it didn't feel that hard, you know. When you look back on hindsight, everything doesn't feel that hard. So yeah. that's really the way I try to think about moving forward.
Yeah.
So back then I was in school.
Mm.
I was in a club and I was swimming like maybe at the peak, right before Beijing, I was swimming like maybe 12 sessions a week and then gymming every single day and then having to balance school and also having to balance like my physio appointments, trips to the dietitian and things like that. So I think at a young age, it really taught me a lot. One of the key things that I learned from my psychologist at that point in time was really to be able to prioritize certain things in life. So anything that has got to do with it, you put it as priority. But like anything else, like for example, I sacrificed a lot of social time. I sacrificed a lot of family time. But at that point in time, it was necessary. So that was how I learned to juggle a lot of things. So I was swimming first and then my studies came later. And then everything else was sacrificed. And at that point in time, it was easier because I think there were no like social media distractions. There wasn't Netflix. Yeah. There wasn't TikTok.
Yeah.
But now I think it's very hard to be able to put down my phone sometimes. So it's about discipline at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And my teachers were very understanding. Mm. Sometimes I really... You could tell that I wasn't paying attention in class. I was probably sleeping somewhere. But I think at a point in time, they were all very supportive. Of course, not supportive of me sleeping, but supportive of me chasing my dreams, my passions, and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I think back then you were saying that was leading up to Beijing, right? That was when you were, what, 15, 16?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I went to Beijing when I was 16. Yeah, but I think the time where I decided that I wanted to was probably when I was 13, 14. My coach actually sat me down and showed me the rankings and then said, like, hey, Pingxiu, you've been doing pretty well the past few years.
Mm.
And if you really commit, put a lot more time into it, we might actually get somewhere. So that was actually the first time where Like I told you, I always take it step by step, right? Like one competition to the next. The Paralympics for me wasn't a big dream when I was young. But when she told me that, it started to be, and I started working towards it. So I think it's extremely important to be paired up with a coach that believes in you, that can bring out the best in you. And that's honestly the key thing that can help an athlete.
It mustn't have been easy for you at that age. I think that's the thing with a lot of our swimming athletes, right? One thing I noticed is that they at very young ages they go into major competitions. I look at the Kua siblings and all that. I think if I'm not wrong, because I'm an educator, so I saw Jingwen receiving colors award at the school level. And then next year, I see her winning medals at the SEA Games or something like that. And that was when she was like, same, 15, 16. So as an old man now, it baffles me to be thinking about the commitment levels that you guys have to put in. And now I also see like my students going through the swimming programs with the clubs. They wake up at like 3, 4 a.m. They head to the pool. They get a swim in before morning assembly and then they come to school and then out in the evenings they get a swim in. And like you said, in the middle, you have to start in a gym session, a physio session.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the unglamorous stuff that people don't see, right? So like the recent thing where I think when Joseph Schooling or Kua Zheng Wen, they didn't get their medals or didn't get the targets. You see everybody online throwing hate and all that, but the work behind it is still the same. I think a lot of people don't see that.
But honestly, at that point in time, it was quite like, even though the comments weren't directed at me, they were directed at the guys, but I felt a lot of injustice for them because I know how much work they put in.
Yeah.
And I really felt that you have to be able to support your athletes at any point in time, not just when they're winning.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because they still wake up at 5, they still put swimming as the priority in life, and really nothing has changed except the competition, and this is something that they cannot control.
Yeah.
So it's so like from then onwards, I started to advocate for more for more support and not just be like fair weather fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's our evolving sporting culture, but I do think that as a nation, as a culture, as a society, we are progressing. I see less and less of these hate comments and all these type of things.
Yes.
I think with personas and athletes like yourself and a lot of others carrying themselves well, earning the respect of the country and the people around, I think that really makes a big difference. Recent times, of course, you have the guys like Kian Yu and all that who are doing well in the badminton scene. So these are really, really, really good signs. And I think for yourself, of course, you still have the Paris journey to look forward to. And that is something that I think many of us are looking forward to.
It really is so exciting to be in a time where the sporting culture grows along with you, you know? Still being in it at this point in time is so exciting, and I'm so grateful for the support that Singaporeans have shown over the years. It's been crazy in a good way, absolutely fantastic way, and I'm excited to see what the future brings.
Now that you mentioned this, right, so how has it been like since coming back from Tokyo? I know there's a lot of media hype, and I probably see that people are jumping on the bandwagon. People are all suddenly supporting the sport, supporting swimming, supporting you. And suddenly, people who have never heard from you before suddenly all start reaching out. So how has it been like?
I actually see it as a really good thing, even if it's a sudden support. I see it as a step forward, and it's been it was really, really busy at the start, but it's starting to stabilize at this point in time. I'm back in training. I've been back in training for more than a month-ish, maybe more than 2 months, I'm not sure. But my cycle is ongoing now, and we are looking at new ways to improve. We are thinking of using the altitude chambers. So that's the sporting side. But other than that, in terms of support, in terms of corporates coming in, it's been nice, because I think more people are starting to realize about this and more people want to hear the story. So I'm just happy to be able to spread the word and to advocate for sports.
I think what you're doing is awesome. I think we should all ride this wave, and hopefully this will benefit the next generation, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay, for yourself, right, like over your many years of swimming and your journey and different big major games, different competitions, training, stints, and all that. Along the way, what are some major hurdles that you had to overcome?
The biggest one really is probably time management. I mean, there are a lot along the way, but there are honestly so many, but okay, if you want to talk about time management, that's like the external part of it. trying to balance everything. But I think internally, it's also the biggest hurdle during COVID was really to, how do I say this? Like really to keep my head down, look at the goal, and then really do whatever I have to reach that goal. It was a very emotionally and mentally trying period. Physically, of course, because it always is. But especially during the COVID period, it was emotionally draining because there were just so many changes all the time. We had a calendar full of events, and then one by one, everything was canceled. Still feels the same this year. Feels like it's what it might happen. But of course, I still have to train, still have to look forward to it, and really just find new ways to adapt to the situation. Yeah, so I think for any athlete out there that's feeling a bit down, feeling a bit like nothing exciting is going to ever happen in their career, I think my advice really is to stick to what you're doing for a while. Hone your craft. It's a good time for you to be thinking of other things other than competition. So thinking of about your warm-up routine, your recovery strategy, focus on other things. It's pretty much like a reset on your life. Try to get it right before everything starts coming back in. Yeah.
At the start of the pandemic, I was telling my boys and telling the anyone I interacted with that I think we are fortunate to have this break away from normal competition season where you, like you said, you have time to adjust your training program, adjust your routines, adjust your mindset, and tweak certain things that in a normal season, in the rush of the competitions and all that, you will not have time to adjust all these, because usually it's pre-season, post-season, and then and everything comes by so fast, right? So now you have that time. But of course, now we are into a third year. I really hope that we move on from this. And I don't know what it will look like. But like you said, time management and all these kind of things, it's a challenge constantly for all our athletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then now we talk about challenges, right? So apart from all the major games, I don't know how you can pick one, but what was your fondest memory from your swimming journey?
If we are talking just specifically about games, it has to be all of the Paralympics. Really, the Olympics, the Paralympics, it's a next level. It's nothing I had ever seen before. So when I actually went for my first one in Beijing, I was so struck by how big and how grand it is. The Games Village and everything is completely different, and the camaraderie at that point in time, the volunteers, they were all fantastic. So, okay, two things most memorable for me. First of all, is definitely winning and having these people along in my journey. And the second one is actually less to do with the sporting achievements itself, but also the impact that I've been able to make on Singaporeans. So having this voice and this power to be speaking up for marginalized groups and really just bringing a bit more awareness to the scene. Yeah, and I think that has been, like, I'm really proud to be able to do that as well. It's not just sports at the end of the day, but it really does flow out into real life.
The power of sport really transcends all the different circles, right? I think you're probably very, very, very selfless in this aspect. For me, if you ask me, when I, out of the many years that I've played rugby, rugby for us, our biggest games is actually the SEA Games. Right. So at any major games, like you said, the organization, the preparation, the setup, everything around it really wows you, right? So I can't imagine going to Paralympics or Olympic Games when I've seen the SEA Games. So I like for yourself, how many major games has it been?
A lot, really. Too many.
I went to your wiki page. I don't know how to scroll the wheel, don't know how many times.
Yeah, I personally have also lost track. But it's 18 years worth of games.
Yeah, wow. Do you have like a... Are you keeping track of all this? Like, do you have a giant cabinet or shelf where you showcase all these medals and all your achievements, or it's just...
I do, actually. I do have a cabinet at home with all the medals and the trophies and things like that. But I think, to me, what's really more close to my heart is this book that I keep with all my records, all my timings and things like that.
Oh.
Yeah, because... Okay. It's really like nice to see the progress that I've made over the years and the competitions I've been on. And like for me, I'm a big fan of photos. So I take a lot of photos. And if I lost my phone at one point in time, so I couldn't find photos from like before 2015 kind of thing. So it was a bit disappointing, but for now I know that I definitely need to back up everything. Yeah.
Now in the technological age, we just assume that everything is iCloud, iPhotos, and whatever.
Yes.
So you still keep a record of all this? Wow.
Yep. Nice. I do.
Okay. Now you mentioned a bit about how you are using sport as a tool for advocacy, advocating change or supporting marginalized groups. Can you maybe share with us what are some of these groups that you really are interested in helping?
So mainly, of course, I start off in the heart of sports, you know, be it para sports, be it able-bodied sports. Sports has completely changed my life. And I want it to also help other people. I want Singaporeans to be a bit more active because it helps them not only physically, but also socially and emotionally.
Mm.
Other than that, other than sport, so I'm in like the Safe Sport Committee, I'm involved in WADA, Athletes Committee, so small things like that. And outside of sports, it's really everything else that I identify with. So being a woman, being a youth, National Youth Council, also, of course, people with disabilities. So really just all of these marginalized groups who need a voice, then I do tend to try to speak up for these people. Yeah, especially because I can also relate. I'm part of the community. So
yeah.
For me, I think it's important.
That's important. I think the key thing is also giving back, right? I think we started off the conversation talking about how pathways for sport really need to evolve and where it's going and how people can make careers out of their sport, right? So Singapore sport, a lot of it is dependent on giving back. A lot of people go through their sporting journeys and ultimately contribute back to the sporting ecosystem. That's where we get stronger and stronger and stronger, right? I think like you said, you are part of it, you are a big part of it, and you are able to have that ripple effect. So hopefully we are able to continue to see the effect, and that will help the next generation. Okay. Now, in terms of your personal life, right? Like, what are some of your plans or aspirations after Paris? Yeah.
Aspirations wise, I do know that I still want to be doing something in relation to sports. Because that's where I have most of my experience, and I am very passionate about high performance in any form, not just in swimming. I'm intending to also set up my own swim school.
Okay.
Because I have seen the effects that swimming has given me as a youth. And it's not physical effects, but really more of like being able to be resilient, being able to be committed to something. And I think all these values are important and something that you cannot really learn in school. So I want to be able to use sports as a vehicle to help pass on these values to certain certain children. And an example was because when I was young, I wasn't really the studying type. You know, I didn't like most of the subjects in school. I was very bad in math. But after Beijing, after taking my O-levels and receiving my results, I thought to myself, if I can be a Paralympic champion, if I can be number one in the world, how is it that I cannot study? So I used the same amount of determination to translate and put it into my studies. I used the same kind of strategies, putting it first, just being a bit more attentive, making sure that I had time set aside for it. And I started to enjoy myself more and to do a lot better. So it's small things like that that I think are traits that will help a kid to be a bit more successful in life, which I want to kind of use swimming as a vehicle to pass it on. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Yeah, so that's that. And other than that, I'm still thinking about it. Yeah.
It's good that you are not having grand plans after Paris, because it shows that you're still committed to, you know, doing your best in the pool.
Yes.
As long as possible. So yeah, that's a good sign. I think a lot of these a lot of like-minded athletes like yourself, myself and maybe some of the others out there I've spoken to, Dipna, Teresa, and some of the others, you know, there's really a lot of like-minded, good-hearted athletes out there. And in that next phase, right, I don't know how we can do it in the best and most efficient way possible, but like you said, whether it's running a swim school, whether it's running an academy, whether it's running workshops to provide all these education to the next generation, I think it's important. I think it's important because like you said, I think you mentioned one thing, which was that these values and these attributes, right? It's hard to pick up in schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to pick up in the classroom.
Yep.
And as much as we have evolved our education system, as much as we like to explicitly talk about these values, ultimately the best place to learn this is on the field, is in the pool, is in the sporting arena, where the teachable moments can come out, where the experiences can take these kids through. And I think one of my bigger concerns over the last few years is actually the lack of these opportunities for the kids to go and do sport. Ultimately, I hope that we move out of this quickly. The situation, the COVID situation, I think has really set the whole progress back a few years. So I'm hoping that, you know, with athletes like yourself continuing to go out there to represent the country and to do it with value, to do it with the right mindset and the right etiquette, I think makes a difference to the next generation. We've been talking about what we want to do for next generation. So if I ask you to, I'm sure you have already done this a few times, but if I ask you to speak to a group of aspiring young athletes, what would you tell them? What are some of your key messages?
My key messages at this point in time would really to be able to, for them to stay committed, for them to have a goal and work towards that goal, right? Which I think athletes have been doing and can do. For me, I think what needs to also change is really the administration part of things. We need to have good administrators in order to be able to partner these athletes in order to make sure that their, at the end of the day, their commitment, their achievements can bring them somewhere a bit further, right? So as an athlete, all they have to do is to do their part. But as somebody who knows that for change to happen, it has to also happen at an administrative level.
Mm.
So I think that is what I want to be doing for the next generation. Mm. It's also to try to see what kind of changes can come along, not just in their attitude, but also in the system.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. That's a very, 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 very interesting point. I think anyone that's been following local sport, you would have gone through all the different articles about with this NSA having this issue, this administration having this issue, this one, the issue, change of coaches, change of administrators, change of GM, and all these kind of things. And we need to really solidify that before we can talk about performance, right? And you cannot expect a kid coming out of school wanting to pursue his sport and doing the best for the country to be thinking about, who is leading us in this administration? Who is my NSA? Who is taking care of us? Or who is helping us in this journey? And I think earlier in the conversation, you mentioned about that coach and athlete relationship, right? So I also noticed I have spoken to Mark once or twice, and I think he has a very strong rapport with you and the other swimmers, right? What is that? Maybe tell us a bit more about how is that like? I know you work with him closely in the SNAC, the Athletes Commission, right?
Oh, different. So because I'm not in the SNOC Athletes Commission, so Mark and myself, the relationship is purely coach and athlete.
Yeah. So how is that dynamic like?
Yeah, okay. So before we move on to that, one of the things I want to say is that administratively wise, one of the things I really see very good progress in is how coaches, for example, the coach SG department, where coaches are starting to have a lot more tools in their belt, starting to be a lot better. And I think that's extremely exciting for athletes moving forward. Mark and I, we started working together in maybe say 2019 or 2018.
In your preparations for Tokyo.
We went up to one World Champs together. That was our first one. I think 2019. So it's been around 3 years. And I really enjoy working with him because, first of all, he is a good coach. And I think that's the very basic. But secondly, he is a good communicator. So he listens to what I have to say. Yeah. I listen to what he has to say, and he works something up. Right. I think working with different athletes, you have to have different skill sets. As the athlete gets more experience, you need to start to listen more instead of just dictate. Right. And I think Mark does that very well. He is a great listener and a great communicator. So we are actually friends out of the pool. And it's good because at this point in time, swimming is a big part of my life, but it's not my whole life. So I need to be able to tell him things that are not related to swimming as well. And I think that really helps to build our relationship and in and out of the pool.
I think that especially for these individual sports, right? That bond, that relationship, we see it all over the world, right? Whether it's sprinters, whether it's on the track, whether it's in the pool, you see it all over the world that individual sport athletes have that the bonds and the kind of communication that exists between the coach and the athlete makes a difference. I think the other example, of course, if you follow the news, right? Like Ken Yu also talks about how his coach is like his big brother, and Yeah, there are lots of images and stories about how they hug and they celebrate together and this kind of thing. So I mean, through the years, I've also, the recent times, right? I see also Mark's involvement in your journey. I think that's a valuable relationship, right? They want to take all the way to Paris and all that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah. How did that partnership come about? Was it like a by chance? Since Mark can coach, why not try it out? Or was it a deliberate thing? Like, let's we have this skill set, we have this ability. Let's partner up and let's work towards this. How was the genesis of it?
It was quite interesting because it really did feel like a right time, right place kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, Mark had a bit more time on his hands to coach, and I was always on deck at the aquatic center. Mm-hmm. So his good friend Gary, who is currently national head coach.
Yeah.
Could see that I wasn't doing very well with my previous coach.
Mm.
So it was a period of time in my life where it was tough because the dynamics with the previous coach wasn't working.
Mm.
And but it wasn't that he was a bad coach or anything. It was more like a different, I just needed a different kind of coaching. Mm-hmm. As compared to that, right? Mm-hmm. So we had to find another coach. And at that point in time, Gary introduced Mark to come and take us to the World Champs, which was initially just supposed to be a couple of months, like maybe 3-4 months. But then we started to work really well together. So we continued all the way till Tokyo and then eventually to Paris as well. Yeah, so it was really like a right time, right place kind of thing. Because if it wasn't the right time, Mark would also be busy with a lot of his other commitments. Yeah. But a lot of things freed up at that point in time, and he was able to work together with us. Yeah,
that's the beauty of sport, man. Like you prepare your whole life, you do all the training, and then it's just about waiting for the right time, right place, right opportunities to arrive. And the message again. Links back to what you were saying before to the younger athletes, right? To persevere, to continue chasing your dreams, and even though it may seem bleak on the horizon, the time will come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it perfectly ties into your story and all that. Okay, Pingxue, I think that's basically all I have. I think we have great value from what you have shared with us. I don't want to go into the other. Mainstream published information about you. I just wanted to find a bit more insight about your journey and your aspirations and some of your targets and goals in the next few years. Do you have any parting words for anyone in the sporting community or anyone that's prospectively going to be listening in?
I think one of the main things that I live by really is to be able to control the things that you can control in life, and then the rest of the things, don't worry too much about it because there's nothing you can do. So I've really tried to live with this motto in my head, and it's been really helpful, especially in the recent times. So I urge people to start practicing this, and I think it makes life a bit easier. It makes the daily life a bit less worrisome, and it's extremely good mentally. Yeah.
Wow. That is a very good point. That is something that I always tell my kids. Mm. But something that takes a lot of practice to do.
Yes, practice.
Right? A lot of times we get so easily swayed by things we can't control, whether it's the weather, whether it's the COVID situation, whether it's all these things that we can't control. But it's a good reminder to anyone listening out there, controlling what you can, ignoring what you can't. Okay, Pingxue, thank you for your
thank
time
you,
for this session. Glad we finally managed to do this. Actually, I don't know whether you recall, but we actually met once.
I remember, yes.
The fashion runway. We met at the Singapore Fashion Runway
at the, museum there, right?
Yeah.
But I've read a lot of news about you, your rugby, I've seen you around, so it's really nice just chatting.
So, like I said, ultimately, you know, hopefully when things are better, right, all our like-minded athletes will come together for just a simple day of chatting and how we can chart certain pathways for Singapore sport moving forward. I think that would be great because we have all these ideas and we have all these dreams, and at the administrative level, I think they need to also know that there's a group of us around that we are trying to do this. I think you keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, you've been an awesome ambassador for sport, awesome Thank ambassador you. For the country. And I look forward to following your performances. And you take care and keep chasing your dreams. And I will be tracking your journey in Paris, definitely.
Thank you so much. You can hit me up for coffee anytime. I'll be more than happy to have a chat. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, take care.
See you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.